The Pennsylvania primary is less than a week away. After nearly 6 weeks without a debate or primary, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton squared off last night in Pennsylvania. In a campaign trail first, Clinton said Barack Obama would be able to beat John McCain in the general election.
Do you think Senator Obama can do that? Can he win?
Yes, yes, yes.
How will the debate affect next week's primary, and which candidate has the upper hand? Here to answer those questions and more, we have Ron Christie, vice president of the lobbying group DC Navigators. He's also a former special assistant to President George W. Bush. And Mary Frances Berry, a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. She is also the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. Hi, folks.
Hi, nice to be with you both.
There is so much going on, so let's talk about these debates. It's been a while since they got together. We've had the Reverend Wright issues, Obama's bitter comments, Clinton's camp dealing with the Bosnia issue. So, Ron, how much news from the last month or so made its way into the debates last night?
I think the first 45 minutes of the debate, Senator Obama was on the defensive, ranging from his association with what I believe to be a former terrorist, the Weather Underground organization, to looking at his comments about people clinging to their guns and their religion due to their bitterness in Pennsylvania. Senator Obama had to confront, since we haven't had a primary in about a month or a caucus, he had to confront many of the issues that are driving his numbers down and are causing a lot of people to take a second look at him. This was his first real opportunity to really go under the microscope and the lens of the focus of the media. But on the other hand, he handled himself pretty well, and I don't think that there was any lasting damage that was brought to Senator Obama in his performance last night.
Now, Mary, the original comment was talking about folks getting bitter, clinging to guns or religion or antipathy to people who aren't like them. Let's listen to Obama defending his comments about the bitter Pennsylvanians last night.
The point I was making was that when people feel like Washington's not listening to them, when they're promised year after year, decade after decade, that their economic situation is going to change, and it doesn't, then politically they end up focusing on those things that are constant, like religion.
Do you think that Senator Obama held up? I mean, Ron said there's no lasting damage, but do you think that he was on the ropes a bit last night, Mary?
I think he was a little bit. I think he was obviously unhappy that they were asking him all of these questions. I also think that on the principal question of why people cling to religion or whatever, that he's wrong, that in terms of people, I know I've been poor and downtrodden and I'm still, you know, religious, whatever, in season and out. But I don't think he really meant to insult anybody or say anything offensive, and I think he was just ruminating. And when he was talking, people are getting tired in this campaign. But I'm not sure that there was any lasting damage. It did show for the general election campaign that McCain and the Republicans, if they keep hitting him hard, they may be able to chip away. But he was obviously unhappy.
Now, Ron, I want to turn to one of those issues important to the African-American community, affirmative action. Senator Obama's tax returns were out, released $4 million last year. Let's listen to how he says he would deal with affirmative action.
Race is still a factor in our society, and I think that for universities and other institutions to say, you know, we're going to take into account the hardships that somebody has experienced because they're black or Latino or because they're a woman, I think that's something that they can take into account. But it can only be in the context of looking at the whole situation of the young person.
Do you think that this is something that's going to come off as offish to some African Americans, Ron?
I do. I mean, he never answered the question. Now, I personally believe that we need to look at people from a wide variety of diversity angles, race being one of them, but that should not be the sole determining factor of whether one has a preference of getting into a college or university. Senator Obama, I think, tried to play it a little bit too cute last night by not directly answering the question. And again, the Republicans have got the TiVo going now. Every time that Senator Obama is on the stage, be it in a debate or be it giving a speech, we're listening to what he's saying and we're filing that away for the general election, which I think is going to be, should he get the nomination, a very, very difficult road for him to victory because of his equivocations on answers such as affirmative action.
Well, I want to ask both of you to stay with us, and we're speaking to Mary Frances Berry, Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania, Ron Christie, Vice President of the lobbying group DC Navigators. This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. We're continuing our conversation about politics with Ron Christie, Vice President of the lobbying group DC Navigators, also former Special Assistant to President George W. Bush, and Mary Frances Berry, Professor of History at the University of Pennsylvania. She's also the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. I'm going to jump right back in. Got a couple last questions on this whole debate issue. Senator Clinton, you know, guns have been a big issue, and Senator Clinton gave her thoughts on how she would deal with the polarizing issue of gun ownership.
I respect the Second Amendment. I respect the rights of lawful gun owners to own guns, to use their guns. But I also believe that most lawful gun owners, whom I have spoken with for many years across our country, also want to be sure that we keep those guns out of the wrong hands. And as president, I will work to try to bridge this divide.
Mary, do you think that this is the answer folks wanted to hear?
I don't know whether they wanted to hear it or not, but she and Obama parsed that question very delicately because the Democratic Party has been trying to run away from the guns issue for a number of years since people think it lost an election for Gore, perhaps, or Kerry, or a lot of things lost election. So I think it was a nicely parsed answer. I think Obama also gave a nicely parsed answer on the question. It's a tough question, but again, they were trying to stay right in the middle.
What issues, Ron, do you think could be deal killers for possible swing voters? Is guns one of them? What else are issues that folks might look at both Senator Clinton and Senator Obama and say they're not quite conservative enough for me, or they're not speaking to me on X, Y, or Z?
Well, as it relates to Pennsylvania, I think that the longer focus that you have with Senator Obama and Senator Clinton talking about religion, talking about guns and the Second Amendment, that does them a lot of harm. But I genuinely believe that the issue that will alienate the independent voter, the voter who's looking at both of them and saying, am I going to swing my vote over to these two, is the abortion issue. Pennsylvania still remains a very blue-collar state in many of the communities across the Commonwealth, and abortion is a very key issue for a lot of these constituents, and they don't like what they're hearing from either candidate. So I would look at those three as we handicap the Pennsylvania primary coming up in a little less than a week as issues that voters are going to take a serious look at and say, does Senator Clinton or Senator Obama represent where I come from and what I believe in?
Well, I don't agree with that, Farai. I think that the answers they both given on the campaign trail to that issue, which is that we support choice, and they do it in stumbling kinds of ways, but we also want to try to limit the number of abortions, is, and I haven't seen any evidence that that issue is outcome determinative among the voters. I think it's going to be the economic issues. I think it's going to be that their proposals are better than the proposals that the Republicans are making. And I want to hasten to add something else and just stick it in here. At the beginning of the show, you had Hillary Clinton saying yes, yes, yes to Obama winning. But she then went on to say that she thought she'd be a better candidate. And he also said that she would absolutely win. I just thought in the interest of fairness, I would throw that in.
They seem to be making a little bit nicer. But,
yeah.
You know, since we're not always nice, I want you guys to give me a possible point spread. This is sometimes our version of sports. Are you guys willing to put a point spread on who will win and by how much in Pennsylvania?
I'm always willing to go with Jim Zogby. I mean, the Zogby poll, which was so terribly wrong with New Hampshire. They were something like 20 points off or not. And they say that Clinton is going to win by 1 point, which I think is chicken to say 1 point. I've seen polls that say Obama. I've seen polls that say Clinton. I say that Clinton's going to win. I'll say that.
I agree with that. I think she'll win by 4 to 5 points. But, again, it's not the overwhelming lead that she needs going into North Carolina and some of the other states that she was looking for.
I think if she gets a win, it'll give her a bounce into the next state. If she loses, it's over.
That's absolutely
right. So essentially, if she wins even by a small number of points, that means we're still in the primary season and we will continue to march on.
She's not getting
we'll
out,
still
Farai.
Be. She's not getting out no matter what?
She's not getting out.
Look, I think Mary would agree with me. I don't see any scenario upon which Senator Clinton's going to get out between now and the end of the nomination process.
I see one.
Well, she's going to do well tomorrow, or she's going to do well, excuse me, next week in Pennsylvania. She's doing very well in the polls in Indiana and in North Carolina. I just don't see it, Mary. I just think that she rides it out and tries to plead to the superdelegates.
I think if she wins in Pennsylvania, she's still in it. At any point, if she loses Indiana, there'll be some questions. But if she wins Pennsylvania, she's going to be in it all the way to Puerto Rico, and we'll still be here. And I can understand why, because with all those delegates she has, so many of them, no one else has pulled out when they had that many delegates. They had fewer. Ted Kennedy, Jesse Jackson, so on. So if she wins Pennsylvania, we'll be here until June.
And the sad thing for the Democrats. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Farai.
No, please. Well, actually, let me move on. You know, I got a couple more things I want to talk about. Let's talk about John McCain. On Monday, the Democratic Party filed a lawsuit against the Federal Elections Commission, or FEC, to investigate whether John McCain has violated federal spending limits for his primary campaign. Ron, what's this lawsuit about? Is there going to be any ramification?
I don't think so. In fact, I actually think this is a strategy fraught with peril with the Democrats. Senator McCain, back when he blew through the first $24 out of $26 million that he had raised, had opted to take public financing. In other words, to allow, if he had reached a certain point, the federal government to pick up the tab for his presidential campaign. Senator Obama, interestingly enough, also had made a pledge that he would take public financing for his campaign. Now, the Democrats are suing, alleging that Senator McCain may have violated some provision or some provision there. But what I find more interesting with this story, if this gains traction, I think the lens is going to be turned back on Senator Obama, who is shattering every fundraising record that seems to be out there, both on the internet and through traditional means. And I think the focus will go back on Senator Obama and say, well, you made a pledge for public financing. Why are you now taking private money and eschewing the promise that you made?
In the public,
Mary, let's go ahead.
In the media discussion, it may go the way that Ron says, but nothing is going to happen to this issue with McCain at the FEC. The FEC doesn't have enough commissioners to even vote, and there's no hope of getting any. They don't even have a quorum, and the lawyers say it'll take 3 years before they ever sort all this out, and by then the election will be long over.
That's right. Absolutely right.
Let's take a quick tour of some international politics. Pope Benedict XVI is in D.C., his first visit to the U.S. since he was made pope. He spent yesterday visiting the White House and President Bush. How significant is this visit? Americans have not had much of a chance to get to know this pope, but there was controversy about his background, his political affiliations in the past. He's now making a lot of apologies for the sex scandals that have plagued the church. What role do visits like these have, Mary?
They inspire the faithful. They're good shows. I knew Pope John, and he was an engaging personality, and first met him when he came here during the Carter administration, and then had occasion to meet with him in Rome several times after that about the Haitian refugees. He was a different, very warm, engaging guy. This guy, he's a pope. He's got all the ruffles and flourishes. He's rather conservative. He doesn't speak really to the social issues that people are concerned about, and he really hasn't said anything about all those bishops who tolerated all of those abuse, the child abuse scandals that went on in the church. But it's good. It inspires the faithful. It makes a show. Everybody gets, you know, to touch him or see him. And so it should give a lift to people who are devout in that way and who like this kind of show.
I think it's great.
Is there really any international ramification? I mean, you know, the Catholic Church has tremendous influence in nations ranging from Nigeria to Mexico, all over the world. So, you know, is this essentially like receiving a head of state?
Yes, I think this is a pivotal visit. I think that it was a miraculous, beautiful day where we saw the President of the United States sitting with Pope Benedict, and when they played the Battle Hymn of the Republic, the symbolism, the beauty of that, but looking at a more theological basis, I think it's important. The Pope will be at Catholic University later this evening, and he'll be talking to administrators and people from the Catholic faith who are involved in education, trying to bring back some of the, what the Pope would call, more secularization of these colleges and universities and remind them of their faith and their upbringing. So I do think it's important for I, from a head of state perspective as well as the theological one, that he's here, but I think it's great that he's here.
And it's also an issue of theocracy, too. There are some people who feel that, you know, someone said to me this morning in public transit, why are we treating the Pope like this? When the head of my church comes, nobody recognizes it. You don't have as many members.
I want to move on to former President Jimmy Carter. Ron, Carter is on a swing through Israel and Egypt. He says he has no intentions of being a negotiator for the U.S., but says someone has to open a dialogue with Hamas leaders. And let's listen to what he had to say in an interview with George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week.
I think that it's very important that at least someone meet with the Hamas leaders to express their views, to ascertain what flexibility they have, to try to induce them to stop all attacks against innocent civilians in Israel, and to cooperate with the Fatah as a group that unites the Palestinians, maybe to get them to agree to a ceasefire.
He's gotten heat for using the word apartheid in reference to Israel-Palestine. Mm-hmm. What do you make of his trip this time, Ron?
I think this is a disgrace. This is an absolutely unmitigated disgrace. A former president of the United States going over to meet with a terrorist, a group that is responsible for killing innocent Israelis, a group that wants to move Israel back to the 1967 border, which is a disgrace because, of course, they want all the Jews out of Jerusalem. For Jimmy Carter to go over there and to give some sort of legitimacy, some form of recognition to a group that is killing Americans, that's killing Israelis, is a disgraceful act on the behavior of the former president of the United States. I can't even be any more angry and really outraged by what he's doing than what I just said.
Mary, do you think that the president, former president, has a point that you have to negotiate in order to make progress?
Oh, I agree with everything that Ron said about the reprehensible nature of Hamas's policy, but I also think that Hamas won an election. We keep forgetting that the Bushes, Rice, asked them to have one over there in the Palestinians, and they won it. And I think that Jimmy Carter, this is vintage Jimmy Carter at this point in his life. He feels this commitment, and that I think Hamas will have to be included. But I also think that we ought to be consistent, and people who don't want to meet with Hamas, I wonder why they keep talking about meeting with the president, Ahmadinejad from Iran, who's just said again yesterday that he felt no regret about what happened to the people who were killed on 9/11. But that's foolish consistency. But I think Carter is just being vintage Carter, and probably at this point he doesn't really care whether anybody agrees with what he does, and that's just the way he is. But he should not have done it without handling it more delicately than he did, in my opinion.
Ron, briefly, the question then arises, I mean, if Hamas was elected, which it was, democracy may or may not always equal what America wants. In that case, do you deal with democracy as it is?
Well, I think it's important to have democratic elections, and Mary's point was absolutely right. Hamas was elected to represent a certain segment of the people in that particular part of the world. The overarching point, however, is that we should not, as the United States, sit down and negotiate with terrorist organizations or terrorists. We've been consistent in this policy. We don't talk to Fidel Castro. We really have broken off our diplomatic relations with Hugo Chavez. We're not cherry-picking our democracy, but instead we refuse unless these organizations renounce terrorism, renounce violence, and are willing to put away their weapons and act in a democratic fashion. I think that's when you start talking to these people, not when they refuse to renounce the reprehensible comments they've made about the state of Israel. It's just absolutely and really unequivocally.
We have to wrap it up, Mary and Ron.
Hamas was a terrorist organization when we told them to have elections, which in my view we never should have done in the first place.
All right, guys, Mary and Ron, always sparky. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Farah.
Mary Frances Berry is a professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania and the former chair of the U.S. Civil Rights Commission. She joined us from the studios at the University of Pennsylvania. And Ron Christie is vice president of the lobbying group DC Navigators. He joined us from our NPR studios in Washington, D.C.